Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Coppens, and unfortunately, Kathleen cannot be with us today. We, however, have a very special guest from the Netherlands with us. His name is Jan-Peter de Jong, and he is a Dutch researcher who has been trying to really bring to light the work of what I considered to be a guardian of the Inca or the Peruvian mystery traditions. And for those people who have been exposed to Dr. Carmen Boulter, we have been talking about her Pyramid Code on a number of occasions, and Carmen obviously has been on our show on a number of occasions as well. She has made contact with these people in Egypt. But Jan has really been studying the Peruvian tradition, where the same kind of people have continuously really kept alive these traditions from the ancient Inca, if not from a time before them. So this person is called Alfredo Gamarra, and rather than me talk a lot about him, Jan is probably the best person to do so. So first of all, Jan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Philip, and thank you for the invitation to be here and to talk about the work of Alfredo Gamarra.
So basically, who is he?
Well, Alfredo Gamarra is not here anymore. He left this world in 1999 when he was 96 years old. He has been a Peruvian who lived in Cusco, the old Inca capital. And he has been studying his whole life about the vestiges in Cusco and what it meant and how they could be interpreted. And he came to conclusions that were much different than what normally is considered as Inca vestiges. And he came to very interesting conclusions. And the work of Alfredo is now continued by his son. His son is called Jesus Gamarra. And I still have contact with Jesus. When I lived in Cusco, we made together a documentary about the work of his father. And, well, there are many very interesting conclusions and details about the work of Alfredo. This is to assume. Of course, I think in the rest of the interview, we will look further into these conclusions. But this is, in short, what I can tell about the work of Alfredo.
And it's extraordinarily interesting already. But just before we delve into Alfredo Gamarra, did you go to Cusco seeking this out, or did you just stumble upon this? Why, or how did you end up in Cusco yourself?
Well, I lived in Cusco, I worked in Cusco, I was working in tourism, and then I met Jesus, the son of Alfredo, just shortly after his father died. He came to me to ask about the possibility to do this documentary. And I already knew Jesus and knew something about the work of his father, which I already found very interesting. So I agreed, and well, we worked together like several years. We did a lot of filming in all the vestiges, and I saw it everything with my own eyes. So I rather got convinced about what Alfredo had to tell and what Jesus showed to me and what we were filming. And it was very interesting. If you go there as a tourist for the first time, you see a lot of stones, and it's rather difficult to see any structure there, because you see a lot of stones that are built in such a way that you say, well, they did a very good work, those Incas. But if you get it explained in the way that Jesus did to me, you start to see it with very different eyes. You see things that you won't see at first sight, and they are things that are really repeated in every vestige. And then you can also see that the things Alfredo pointed to, you can see them also on world level. For example, his conclusion that the vestiges are much older than Inca time, and that the Inca only built over already existing structures and stonework, you start to see, if you see it repeated in every place where the Incas are supposed to be the builders, but they were not. So that is in short what I've been seeing, and a lot of details also start to be clear when you see, for example, the vitrification on the stones, also something that is systematically repeated in all the vestiges, something that is completely ignored by other investigators, and it is really something that I still don't understand why Orthodox investigators don't see this, why they don't investigate this. And many details you start to see when you're really visiting these vestiges with those other eyes, as I said before. You really need to think in another way. You need to see it in another way. And that was a very interesting process that happened with me, and what really got me convinced that Alfredo Gamarra has something very important to say to the world. And of course, there are other investigators on the ancient mysteries. How you say that on the ancient mysteries? Not really the more scientific, orthodox scientific researchers in archaeology, because they won't put the world upside down. But a broader, in another way, you have to think upside down, really, because what was first, it's really much older than Inca time. And
I mean, it's apparent when you're there, but I mean, just to go back to people who've not been to Cusco, what you're confronted with from a standard point of view is basically you're being told that Cusco was the navel of the Inca Empire, that this was the navel of the world. Cusco means navel, or at least is derived from the word navel. You're confronted with the capital of the ancient Inca Empire, and you really have to, first of all, already remove all the Christian layer which has been put on top of that, because obviously when the Spanish came there and they were confronted with what some people say was once the greatest temple on earth, rivaling Karnak in Egypt, what they see there right now is a church, a monastery, and parts of that are a central courtyard where you have to imagine things like the fact that this central courtyard at one point contained nothing but gold statues, that the Spanish took all of this gold, melted it down, and put it on ships back to Spain, where actually it never arrived because English pirates conquered it. You have to imagine that there was this gigantic temple with tremendous amount of stones. And when you step outside just below the Coricanca, which is the central temple complex, you see some of these stones. And then on top of, I would say, about 2.5 meters high, you see smaller stones. And for an archaeologist, this is just all built by the Incas. And the smaller stones on top are just a later stage of Inca. And there are traditions in Peru which basically say that this is the sacred valley, this is part of the sacred valley, together with places like Ollantaytambo. There are traditions which say that a civilizing deity known as Viracocha appeared out of thin air, out of another dimension, at Lake Titicaca, went down the sacred valley, and left his imprint on a number of places, including Cusco and at Ollantaytambo. And when you're at Ollantaytambo, you once again are confronted with this massive stoneworks. And Ollantaytambo is featured into the direction of a hill. And in that hill, you see a human face. And it is said that this is the face of the god Viracocha, who eternally will guide or guard over the presence of the temple complex of Ollantaytambo. That is completely different from the standard history. And it is really Alfredo who, I think, tried to bridge those two worlds, if I'm not mistaken. He really wanted to show people the archaeology which underpinned the mythology of ancient Peru.
Yes, well, Alfredo saw how the different stoneworks, what was the sequence of the different kind of stoneworks. He has shown to me, well, not himself, but his son Jesus showed to me, how the different stoneworks are built in all those places like Ollantaytambo, like Coricancha in Cusco, like Sacsayhuaman. And what you see then is that they are built over or around certain structures that are inside the rock, which he calls the Hanan Pacha style. You see, for example, in Ollantaytambo, there is also a Hanan Pacha style that is the six monoliths on top of the hill. I suppose you know, Philip, six very big stones that fit perfectly together. You see also that there are structures made in it. If you see it with a special light, you see that it's like they were working with cement. You mm-hmm. see structures made into it, and you see also the vitrification, the like glass finish on certain parts of stone, especially on the borders. And there are other structures in Ollantaytambo at the foot of the hill below the terraces. There is like a big rock with very smooth structures made in it also, as if they were just scraping it out with when it was soft, in a soft state. Alfredo came to the conclusion that in all those vestiges we can recognize the three different styles which he said correspond to three different worlds where human humanity has passed through. So at this moment we are at a certain level and we only could repeat like what has been done by the Incas, the third style, which is of very simple small stones. They were worked upon with hammer and chisel. So those stone walls made with this kind of stones do not fit perfectly. They are a style that we could repeat right now. No, making it with our own hands with a hammer and a chisel. And the other two styles, the first one I was talking about, is the Hanan Pacha style that is normally made in the same rock. And you get things in Machu Picchu, for example, you have the solar clock that is a structure made in the rock of the hill that comes upwards, that's on the upper part of the hill. And around it you see those walls. And they can be walls that can be very perfect, or they can be walls that are not that perfect and would have been made by the Incas. The perfect fitting walls are the second style that he recognized. These three different styles are very obvious once you know about it, once you get to hear about it. And all the vestiges are made like that. In the center or below is that first style, and then we get those two different styles, one with perfect fitting walls that can be very big stones, like in Sacsayhuaman. You have those tremendous stones for more than 100 tons, or they can be somewhat smaller, but the characteristic is that they always fit perfectly, and they always show like having been molded, sometimes in cushion form, or sometimes very rectangular, for example, like the very perfect style we have at Coricancha. But this is always considered as a second style by Alfredo Camara. And on those first two styles, we always can recognize the vitrification, the vitrified parts on the stone. This is something that is, I consider it very important, because the first two styles, we really don't know how it was constructed. We can't repeat it. We don't know which technology it was. we only can assume that, as we see the vitrification, that it must have been with heat. But what the exact technology was, we don't know. We don't have right now the technology to repeat this exactly. And that is the big mystery about it. And the explanation of Alfredo Gamarra is here very interesting, because he said that in during those two earlier times when those two styles were constructed, that we had other circumstances on Earth. We had circumstances with less gravity and less density of the atmosphere, which meant that all materials were different. The density of materials was different, and people were different. They were bigger because of less gravity, and they could do things that we can't do right now. This is not the work of the Incas. It was done in another time with other circumstances. Of course, there are indications, and that is what I try to do in my ebook, to the conclusions of Alfredo, to a bit elaborate about it and tell why I think he could be on a good track with his conclusions, because there are really elements in this theory that have connections with other theories about the Earth and the geologic history of Earth, for example, and also about life, the history of life on Earth. We can see of all kinds of species in the animal world or in the plant world that there were bigger forms in the past. And of course, there are a lot of legends and myths about the giants of the past, and you can see it in all cultures, in Egypt, in Peru, and in Malta, in all kind of places we hear about this. And I think we have to take it very literal, this kind of myths and legends. And Alfredo, the interesting part of Alfredo's work is that many things can be taken very literal.
I mean, one of the things which I like about him was that he said very early on, you know, we call this the new world, but actually it is the old world. And he is really ahead of his time there. As you said, Alfredo died in 1999, but shortly after he died, it was at Corral in northern Peru that people began to find out, archaeologists began to find out, that the oldest pyramids in the world are indeed Peruvian. They are 3,200 years old, which makes them 800 years older than the official dating of the Great Pyramid in Egypt.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, Charles T. Mann is another person in a number of books. 1491 is probably his most famous. But he is also underlining how we have this really wrong view of America, and that everything in America is indeed far older than we want to give it credit for, because to a large extent the Spanish, when they got there, considered them to be savages. And there were also early reports when people went into the Amazonian basin of seeing gigantically big civilizations, and then 30 years later the next expedition came and didn't see anything. It was thought that the first expedition had merely invented all of these things, but now it has been found out through satellite imagery that all of these civilizations were there, and that it was probably diseases which the European explorers brought with them, which completely annihilated these civilizations in the Amazonian basin. But I mean, the idea that the new world is the old world is slowly rising to the forefront. Now, you know, as you say, traditionally, the Incas are still dated to be very young. But when we just go north of Peru to the Mayan heartland, there we have a sort of similar suggestion. The Mayans are sometimes deemed to be a bit older. Sometimes with the Olmecs we go back to a few centuries BC. Sometimes we push the edge back to 500, 800 BC. But the Mayans themselves speak of this time, and they say that their most important complex, Teotihuacan, was built in 3114 at the dawn of this cycle of time, this long cycle of 5,000 years, which comes to an end in 2012. And so in that case, in the Mayan case, there is still a divide of 2,000 years, roughly, between what the Mayans say their origins are and what the archaeologists are willing to say. And in the case of the Incas, how far do we need to push back? We know about pyramids in North Peru to do with Corral. Cusco is still dated far more recent than that. Where did Gambara think where we had to put the origins of Cusco?
Well, Gambara is going much further back. And as I said before, the Incas, according to Alfredo, only built the simpler walls with the smaller stones, and all the more perfect stonework is much older. Not only in Peru, but also in other parts of the world. So we can see the same style, for example, in the pyramids of Egypt. And the first style of the Hanan Pacha that was made in the rock in situ, as we say. So that style would have been the style of the first world. As he said, it was the time of paradise, as he compares with the Bible or with other religions and the creation stories. He said that was the time when humanity was born, and it was like 80,000 or 100,000 years ago. And that was what he said, the first orbits. And he said it would have been an orbit of 225 days around the sun. And during that orbit, the whole Earth was like paradise. It had a very even climate all over. It was a smaller Earth with less gravity, which also has the consequence that you could live much longer, because gravity is a factor that is a force that your whole life is like pulling you down. And if that force is much less, then theoretically you could live much longer. So that is the reason that he thinks that first style we can find in all the vestiges of the Incas, that we can find, for example, in the Great Pyramid, the Hanan Pacha style in the Great Pyramid is, for example, the underground chamber, what they say about that it would be an unfinished chamber. But it's really, for Alfredo, the reason that they made this big pyramid above it, it was to respect this first style of the first people. We can see something similar in Malta, where we have the Hippogeum, something very similar to the underground chamber, or to structures we find in Cusco of this same Hanan Pacha style. So this Hanan Pacha style is much older than, for example, the Pyramid of Corral, which Orthodox archaeologists say is the oldest structures in the Americas, as they said recently. But this pyramid is not made with this kind of technology. It is a pyramid made with a technology we could repeat in our days, like the technology of the Incas. So this corresponds to the latest style, to the third period that Alfredo was detecting. And Hanan Pacha would have been the first style, the style made in the rock. Then we would have another orbit. It would have been a change from 225 days to 260 days. And that was a time that they were able to build the giant walls of Sacsayhuaman, for example, and all the other perfect fitting stone walls in Cusco and in other places over the world. It's a style we can see, for example, in Easter Island or in Egypt, and also in Malta and in other places all over the world. So he doesn't agree with the conclusions of the pyramids of the coast of Peru are the oldest in the Americas. He says the stonework of Cusco, below or within the walls that were made by the Incas, are much older than that time, the time of them when they made the pyramids at the coast of Peru.
And you've been highlighting that this style has been found in other places, but you've also found that style on Temple Mount in Jerusalem, which is also described as a naval point for the world. So you're basically saying that this Hanampacha culture was global in focus. So if it's a global culture, did Gemara say certain things about, for example, where its center would be, who they were, where they came from, what their main emphasis was, why they built in the way they built?
Yeah, well, what we see in a Hanampacha style is that there are structures that they don't fit in our understanding. We don't really understand why they did it or what it was meant for. You see that in the Inca vestiges. Why would they make a wall around those places? We don't understand what the function of it. So what he says is that they did things in a time that we don't know about and that we don't understand enough to understand why they made it or what they did with it. And it's a style, sometimes it has a very modern look, as if they cut cheese, as if they were cutting butter, or sometimes they say, well, they did it with a laser, or it was done by aliens, and you know, it is a style we don't understand. And Alfredo said it is because we weren't like them. We were not the same people. Of course, we are the same. We are descendants from them. We came from those people. But they lived in a time that physical circumstances on us were much different. They had a lot more capacities than we have. They were bigger. And they could manipulate the material in a much different way than we are able to do now. So and you see those structures like the underground chamber, or as you said, on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, a structure that is right now sacred for three religions, for the Jewish, for the Islam, and for Christians. It's a very sacred structure. And we don't understand about it. Why would a structure like that made in a rock be so important? You know, it's like a tradition. And you see that same tradition in other places, as Malta. For example, the stone in the middle of the circles of Stonehenge is considered also a Hanampacha stone by Alfredo Gomara. So they built over the Hanampacha style. And those are the most sacred monuments on Earth. They are built around or over Hanampacha style. For example, also the Parthenon in Greece, we discovered later that it is built over Hanampacha mountain. You see structures made in that mountain that are the typical Hanampacha style. It was something Alfredo didn't know, but when I did a conference, the Frontier Conference, I met an artist that later went to Athens, and he sent me pictures about it. And he said, well, this is exactly as you described the Hanampacha style. He saw the documentary, and it was really interesting to see that people, especially artists, they seem to have an eye for these kind of things rather than the more scientific minded people, because you really need to see it. You have to see how it's built, how it's made, to understand what it's exactly about. And so that's very interesting to later come to the conclusion that Alfredo was right. I've been exploring the internet with Jesus when I lived still in Cusco. We have made a lot of discoveries and said, okay, yes, this is also Hanampacha style in another part of the world, for example, in India. The Yonaguni style is, of course, exactly like the Hanampacha style, and etc., etc. So that was a very interesting tour for me to explore the world by the internet, because when I made a documentary with Jesus, it was the time also that internet came available in Cusco. And we were able to do this. Very interesting to see that Alfredo was really right about his conclusions.
And it's very interesting that, you know, you step into not necessarily his footsteps, but that you begin to see the world through his eyes, that you kind of like become a spiritual heir and a promoter of his work outside of his native country. Now, one of the things which I thought was amazing, and I will let you explain this because it's complex, but basically the language of that area, Aymara, is something very special. It's like no other language almost. Why is that? What is so special about this language, and what is the importance of it?
Yeah, well, Aymara seems to have a very special structure, and of course, Alfredo, he was not exactly Aymara. He didn't have too much knowledge about Aymara, more about Quechua, but Aymara and Quechua are similar. And they came to also to the conclusion that Aymara would have been like an artificial language, and the language that was constructed by people after they needed to learn to talk again. Because what Alfredo said is that thanks to the less density, less gravity, people before, in the earlier orbit of 260 days, it was not necessary to talk. We were able to communicate with telepathy. And also in the first orbit of 225 days, in the times of the paradise on Earth, we didn't have the necessity to talk as we are talking right now. No, because thanks to less density of all materials, it was possible to communicate with telepathy. And when there was a change of orbit and people had to deal with other circumstances on Earth with the density, with more density and with more gravity, we had to learn to talk as we are talking now. And he said, well, then they constructed like a language, the first language on Earth, which right now Aymara and Quechua seem to be the remnants of this first language. And there are many indications that Quechua and Aymara are like a root language. They have many similarities with other languages all over the world. I met, when I first came in Cusco, I met a professor in languages, and he was very knowledgeable about Quechua, and he was able to speak like 8 languages only because he knew the Quechua language very well. And he said, well, you can see things of Quechua in, for example, Chinese or Japanese. And I consider that Quechua was like a root language. And the same conclusion Alfredo Camara made about the language. And, I only met Jesus Camara after this first, after this teacher of Quechua that I met in Cusco. And It's a conclusion that was repeated. So there really seems to be something special about Quechua and Aymara languages. And what happened is that in Cusco, according to Alfredo, the Sacsayhuaman vestige would have been the Tower of Babel, and Cusco would have been Babel the Great, not the Babylon of right now that exists in Iraq, but the Great Babylon, the old Babylon that is described in the Bible. And for Alfredo, Cusco is the old Babylon, the Great Babylon, and Sacsayhuaman, the Tower of Babel, just above the city. You can see it as a tower, you know. And this seems, of course, another very extreme conclusion, but if you hear Jesus Camara about the reasons why Alfredo thought this way, then one of the reasons is, for example, the language. That the first language would have been Quechua, or would have been like the what was just before the Quechua and Aymara, and they Aymara and Quechua are right now what was left of that first language. And if you see the similarities with the languages all over the world, I started thinking, why not? There is a lot of literature about it, and a lot of people came to similar conclusions.
I mean, absolutely. And the interesting thing is also that we are here confronted with, you know, something which is alive, which somehow we're beginning to understand, but it really needs a proper analysis to kind of like delve into the history of languages and try to understand why certain things come about. And as you are pointing out, you know, this is slow progress, and trying to figure out whether a language somehow was created on purpose and from there continued onwards, or whether a language comes about naturally is something which very few people can actually distinguish, and very few people actually focus on. And another thing which I think you have been focusing on, and you hinted at it, which is that there was a time in the Bible talks about it when there were giants on Earth, and Peru definitely has its fair share of anomalies as well, specifically the elongated skulls which have been found there. Some of them are modifications. Some of them are human skulls which have been modified by parents from who basically took the skulls of their babies and began to shape them into an elongated skull. Peru is not unique. There are other places in the world, but nowhere really is there a straightforward answer as to why somebody would specifically deform the skull of an infant. And the few traditions which are talking about that say that it has to do with the fact that they wanted to make these children look like the gods. So did Gamara say anything about that? What were his opinions about our ancestors? Because when you talk about a world where there is less gravity, I would also assume we would be somewhat different as well.
Yeah, exactly. What Gamara said about elongated skulls is that the naturally formed elongated skulls would have been from a former period, from the Urantpatja time, so the period before this orbit, and they formed naturally like that. What I can imagine, what was happening, that because of less gravity, the forming of bones would have been slower, and maybe that was the reason that the head would have formed differently. You know that the upper part of the head is of the skull is the latest part that closes when a baby is born. There is a part that's still open, and if for some reason the process is longer, that it the bone can still grow, it could be elongated. And one of the factors that influences on this is gravity. If an astronaut goes to space, we know now that his bones become weak. They could become weaker. This is proved by NASA. They know about this. They see it as a sickness because, we don't want our bones to get less weak or to get soft, you know. But in space, you don't need to have very strong bones because you don't have to support your body thanks to the less gravity in space. So if there were other circumstances of gravity in the past, they were growing, I think, very differently than what happens now. With more gravity, bone forming would be faster and would be the bones will grow bigger and maybe more dense than in the past. I've been insisting to get density data about those skulls, but I still haven't heard about anything about this. I don't expect the DNA to be much different. Some people say, well, there must have been extraterrestrials, but I don't believe in this. I think they lived under other circumstances than present days, and that is the reason that they grew somewhat different than we. They could be bigger. They could form bigger heads and skulls. And that is the reason that we can see naturally formed elongated skulls. That is the opinion of Alfredo also. And the other artificial ones, as you said, it would have been to imitate the gods.
But you've also said that from this earliest period, we probably are not going to find too much human remains, because basically, first of all, it's very old and there are not that many human bones. You actually think that the bone structure would be more like what we have today as cartilage, that it wasn't so dense, for lack of a better word, or maybe the perfect word for the occasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, a bit sinking in the same direction, that at the first orbit, during those times, gravity was still less than the second orbit. So the elongated skulls would have been from the second orbit, and then before that, with less gravity, bones would have been even less dense and were more like cartilage, and that would be much easier to disappear with thousands of years. And maybe there are still some rests. I know there are a lot of histories about big skeletons they found, and sometimes it's a bit difficult to know if this is for real or it's just somebody that did a bit of photoshopping. But I know there exist a lot of stories about it, so maybe they are true, or maybe we simply don't find them because of this, that those bones were a lot less dense than nowadays. And it's logic if you think in this way of less gravity and how it would have effect on the body and the bones.
Absolutely. And I mean, one of the things is that when we look at the way the history of Peru is often presented, we see a very, what I would call archaeological point of view. But there are also people who have stepped out of that mold and who have basically said, no, some of these things are not the way they are. On a very basic level, people who are going to Peru, there is a book on sale there quite often outside of Ollantaytambo and a few other places by the Salazar brothers, and they show how in Machu Picchu, how in Cusco, how in Ollantaytambo, patterns in the way these cities were laid out were really shaped in the form of a tiger or another animal, and that even the shape of these places has to do with very important aspects. The John Major Jenkins has been pointing out how the Sacred Valley has links with the layout of the Milky Way. William Sullivan, in his book on the Incas, tries to push in that same direction. But one person, I think, who several decades ago was amongst the first to stand out and say, no, the history of Peru is wrong the way we are presenting it, was somebody called Arthur Poznanski. And he was very inspirational, or his writings were very inspirational for Graham Hancock when he was writing Fingerprints of the Gods. And Poznanski basically was saying that Teotihuacan was extremely old, that he considered it to be 15,000 years old. He considered it to be part of something which was truly lost. And again, here this classic standoff is that archaeology says, well, Hancock is completely wrong, because we have been able to really show that Poznanski is wrong. But they have done so through what I would call ingenious factors. And in the Ancient Alien series, whenever they ask about what is the best evidence for the fact that we have been completely different, that we have been visited by non-human intelligences, I always say Machu Picchu. And what they have done there, Machu Picchu is part of this Tiwanaku complex, and in Machu Picchu there is no direct dating. They have dated the fact that at some point somebody left something next to some of these stones, and that this happened in 800 AD, and therefore they have dated these stones to 800 AD. But it is almost like going to Stonehenge and leaving a Mars bar wrapper there, and 5,000 years from now somebody uses this Mars bar wrapper to say that we were building Stonehenge. You would be wrong by thousands of years. And the same thing is basically happening the way archaeology goes with Tiwanaku and Pumapunku. But I was very interested to see that Alfredo went to Tiwanaku to basically identify remains of these old cultures, this pre-Inca civilization.
Exactly, yes. Well, Poznanski did a great work, and thanks to Alfredo and Jesus' indications, I got to know about Poznanski's work and Graham Hancock's work, and you know they are in the same direction with conclusions of Alfredo about the time span. It's a lot older than we normally assume, and Poznanski is certainly right, I think, about the how old Tiwanaku would have been. And what Alfredo's merit is here is that he also indicates that the different layers exist, also in Pumapunku, also in Tiwanaku. I've been there also, and I, with Jesus, we went to Keller, we filmed there, and then we see the same existing layers as in the other Inca vestiges. You see the Hanampacha style, the same bedrock is there. You know, it's normally they don't consider it, but it's if you want to see it, you can find it there, and it really exists. And then we have the perfect fitting walls, and we have the big stones of Pumapunku, and all made with similar technology. It's not always that obvious, because some things that it was machined, but if you start to look well, you find vitrification, and you see that it's been molded, and you know, you see the same things as in the other Inca vestiges, only it's made in a different kind of stone. So, but the technology was very similar. And the layers is what's very important there. And there seemed to have been a mud stream there that went over the first style, and then there came another style. And, you know, it's another confirmation of Alfredo's insights, the ruins of Tiwanaku.
And what I also find very important in his work is that he is always stating that it's not limited to Peru, that this is really a global phenomenon, that what he identified in Peru has counterparts or equivalents elsewhere. You were talking about Malta, you were talking about Stonehenge. Again, this goes radically against traditional archaeology, who basically says that all of these cultures developed completely independent of each other. Alfredo was saying exactly the opposite.
Exactly, yes. It's a global culture. Both styles, both the Hanampacha style and both the Urampacha style, they exist on world level and over the whole world. We can see it in all the continents, and all the time I'm getting to know more thanks to the internet, thanks to people indicating me and showing me pictures of, for example, India. Also, there are a lot of vestiges in India. In that way, I sometimes doubt a bit about Alfredo's conclusion that 80% of the Hanampacha style will be in Peru. I think he must have known about more Hanampacha styles, and then he would maybe modified this number. But of course, there is a lot of presence of the Hanampacha style in and around Cusco, and I know that because I've seen it. But all the time I'm seeing more and more examples over the whole world, and they have the same characteristics as the stonework in Cusco. It's made in the same rock, it's has rounded internal corners, and it seems that it was like pressed in the rock as if it was in a soft state those times. And also the vitrification, especially if it's inside in a cave, then you see still this layer of vitrification. And it's very interesting for me was also that a sample that I could investigate here in Holland in university, it really shows that that there was heat technology what they made use of to get this result of a vitrified layer. And I would really like to investigate all the Hanan Pacha style over the whole world to see if this is the case. Also, of course, I suspect that, but it would be good to really have the data to be able to show really to the world that there is something very different to our history than normally is assumed, and that it's the other way around with many things.
And what I like about Gamara is also the following, that he actually, you know, whenever we talk about ancient civilizations, we look at the Great Pyramid, we look at Cusco, the walls of Sacsayhuaman, the pyramids of Central America. But he's actually saying, okay, that's kind of the distraction. You really need to look at why they built certain things in those places. And he almost points out and says, like, it's a bit of rock which is at the core of these things. And it's really something, I think, which we in a Western world, whether we are archaeologists, whether we are alternative historians, we always... I think get attracted by the big thing which we built in, you know, at some point in our past, and then we debate how old it is. But he really brings it down and says, like, well, but those things were built on top or next to what appears to be a piece of rock, which we know for a fact that our ancestors held far more divine than. The flashy pyramid next to it. And I think that's really, you know, the core message which I really fell in love with his research. And it almost kind of, like, you know, makes you dream away of how when there was indeed this earth which was more moldable and more flexible, that somehow these ancients identified pieces of rock which was already hard, which was already dense, but which throughout our time has continued to be worshipped as extraordinary. And when you're coming to the Dome of the Rock, as you were pointing out earlier, it's a piece of rock which three religions fight over and has seen some of the most fierce fighting ever in the history of the last few thousands of years. And it is remarkable that he connects with those specific places and basically points out or at least gives a reason why they might be so important.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the nicest things about this is that there wouldn't be need to fight about it because we have common ancestors and they're fighting about the same thing. And the three religions would have been founded also because of this. And they are really fighting for something that is, it would be needless if you understand the reason. You know?
It's absolutely. What we share in common, and back to basics, which is this, yeah, this common, you know, heritage, which we are all at one point in love with, and which we're trying to understand so desperately. So this is obviously a radio show, but as you were highlighting, you've also done a DVD. So for people who want to see this thing visually rather than hear it, where can they go? What can they see?
Well, we together with Jesus Gamarra, we made the DVD, the documentary that's called The Cosmogony of the Three Worlds, in which you can see all the evidence in the stonework, especially of Cusco and surroundings. And the special things that you can see are, for example, the vitrification, the molding of the stones, how they fit so perfectly, and the three different styles of the Hanan Pacha, the Uran Pacha, and the later style of the Ukun Pacha of the Incas. We put them together and we show them what are the differences and how they are built in all the time the same sequence. And also we show in the last chapter on the documentary that you can find these things in other parts of the world, as we were talking about, and how it's really something that is systematically present. You know, it's almost like repeating the same pattern in many vestiges over the whole world. And if you want to see the documentary, well, you could buy it on Amazon.com. You could just type in the cosmogony of the three worlds and then you will find it. Or you can go to my website, and my website is www.ancient-mysteries-explained.com.
And then we will put those links on our own website, which is thespiritrevolution.com. We have come to the end of this show. Time has flown again. If you want to listen to this show, there are, as usual, a number of ways of doing this. You can go to Facebook, where facebook.com/spiritrevolution. You can listen to our shows there. You can also go to thespiritrevolution.com, where you can listen to the 5 latest episodes of our show. On iTunes, you get about a year and a half for free of our shows. However, if you're looking for certain things which are even older than that, specifically show-wise, you should go to the BBS Radio Archives on bbsradio.com, where you can find all of our shows archived. More than 2 years of our shows are available there. However, there is a small fee for that. You will also get, however, not just our shows, but you will also get all the other shows which are being aired on the BBS Radio Archive. We have come to the conclusion of this show, but as usual, from Kathleen and myself, from the both of us, the truth against the world.